You know what time it is. Come on. Weekend. Warrior. Podcast. Let me hear you. Come on. Weekend. Warrior. Podcast.
Weekend Warrior Pod. Let's go.
No hot takes. No garbage. Just real talk.
Weekend Warrior Pod. Let's go.
No fake takes. No first takes. Just real talk.
Weekend Warrior Pod. Let's go.
This is the Weekend Warrior Podcast presented by WTP Sports. I am your host, as always, Pat Lane. Tonight is episode 72. That makes it the Matt Light episode, the Frank Vatrano episode, or the Xander Bogaerts episode. I also want to send a quick shout out to everyone listening on 12 Ounce Sports Radio. Thanks for listening, and I hope you're enjoying the internet radio station. It's on the rise, up and coming, so we appreciate you listening. Tonight, great show today. We have Rich Hill from Pat's Pulpit on. We talk some Patriots. We don't even recap the Lions game because that game just sucks so much that we just pretend like it doesn't even exist. We also got another edition of Love Hate with Chris coming on the show. 3-minute drill. And as always, this week in sports history. Now, before I get you into the Rich Hill interview, I just want to remind you that Beard Brand is a premium men's grooming company with products not only for your beard, but also for your hair and body. Do yourself a favor and head over to beardbrand.com and take care of yourself. Gentlemen, it's almost beard season. Like, come on now. You got to hit up Beard Brand. They got enough non-beard stuff, but you got to hit up Beard Brand. So, without further ado, let's get into that interview with Rich Hill. All right, we're going to welcome on Rich Hill. He is the managing editor of Pat's Pulpit. Here to talk some Patriots with us. We'll try to keep it positive as much as we can. But Rich, thanks for coming on the show.
Absolutely, Pat. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So I guess we'll get right into it. What the hell is going on with the Patriots?
Oh, man, where do you even want to start here? / can we just end it? there's probably not a single grouping on the team, like positional group-wise, where you would say, yeah, they're good. Right? I feel like everywhere you turn on this roster, they're underperforming or they're just outright bad.
Right. It's just, oh my goodness. And, you know, and it's not even just the players themselves. I feel like the coaches, you know, are part of the problem as well. And Mark Schofield on the Locked On Patriots podcast was going through some Evan Lazar numbers. And he was saying like 73% of the time that Sony Michel is in the game, they run the ball. And like 78% of the time, White's in the game, they pass the ball. And it's like, could you be more predictable than that? Like, it's just, it's unbelievable. You know, and the stat. No, go ahead, go ahead.
Oh, yeah, I was going to say, what's tough with that, too, is that they don't have any other options, really, right? Because Sony Michel's a rookie. You're not going to ask him to go there and pass protection. Burkhead's out. Jeremy Hill's out. So they don't really have too many other choices. And it's like, that's what they're left with because it's bad luck of the draw.
Right. Well, it's frustrating too because you look at it and say, I thought going into the season that running back was a position of strength for them. You know, you talk about Hill and Burkhead and White and Michelle and even, you know, the rookie, what the hell was the kid's name? 22, the kid who had three touchdowns
Ralph
in the first
Webb.
Game. That's it, Webb. I kept wanting to say Hilt because that was the 22 on defense. But, you know, I looked at it and said, they got a ton of guys that can perform at the running back position. And now, you know, White isn't really a runner. He's more of a passer, more of a, you know, pass catcher. And now you got Burkhead out, Hill out. And it's like, you know, you don't know what you're getting from Michelle. And so now all of a sudden that position of strength has turned into really a position of weakness, I think.
Oh, totally. I mean, just – it's a trickle-down effect as well because the offensive line has not been blocking well. There aren't any other receivers out. So whatever weaknesses you have at the position are just going to be exacerbated by the fact that no one's afraid of any of these receivers. You can stack the box. You can make sure that you have enough people to tackle them in the backfield. When James White is your leading yards person on your offense, that's not a good sign, right? I mean, you have James White, Gronk, and Burkhead. Those are your top three. Burkhead's out for the year. This is just not a very versatile offense. You can't really trust anyone else to step up.
No, and I agree with you. I mean, that's, you know, one more note about Michelle. I think the number is ridiculous, but I think it's like he's been on the field for like 35 snaps in two games, and they've either given him the ball or thrown the ball to him 29 times out of 35 snaps. And it's just, I mean, I get it. You think he's like a playmaker and you want him to, but like, that's just ridiculous. I mean, like, you just mix it up a little bit when he's in the game. I mean, like, for goodness sake, you know? And so that's one of those, again, like predictability things. Like, he's in the, okay, he's in the game. He's probably getting the ball, you know? And it's just like, as a rookie, especially, it's like, you're going to put that much pressure on this kid? It's just a recipe for disaster.
Yeah, it's true. And I mean, from your perspective, what do you think the solution is for the offense, right? Like, they added Tanjon Barner, who I'm not expecting to have any big roles. So I still expect to be the Sony Michel, James White show out of the backfield. But Chris Hogan has regressed in a major way. He's not getting open at all. I mean, Philip Dorsett is inconsistent. You can't really rely on him, despite the fact that he's leading the team in leading the wide receivers in receiving yards. And Cordarrelle Patterson is just like a gadget guy. So, like, well, what are the solutions that they have that can fix it, especially with this upcoming game against the Dolphins and a pretty good defense?
Right. Well, that's the tough part is that at this point, you look at it and say, Hogan and Dorsett are fine, but they're not number one, number two receiver guys. They're just not. And so, like, I'm praying that Josh Gordon is available for this game. And not that I think he's like can run the route tree and do a bunch of stuff, but if Gordon comes out, he can at least beat man coverage. And like Hogan, I think has shown over time that he can't do that. I mean, you know, in the Super Bowl, in Super Bowl 51, the only guy that was beating man coverage consistently was Malcolm Mitchell. And so it was like nobody else was really beating man coverage outside of Malcolm Mitchell, who's obviously gone now too. So you look at it and say, Hogan's just not that guy. He's a very nice third option. Very nice third option. And, you know, and I think Dorsett could be a very nice third or fourth option too. But when you start to try to make them the first or second option, you're in trouble at that point because they just can't do it. And at this point, you run man coverage and double Gronk, and there's nobody open on any play. And so that's where it becomes difficult. And that's for me with Gordon. I feel like, because you're right, this game is like, you know, Miami's a good team, and it's an absolute must win for them. You can't lose this game and go down three games to Miami. They're 4-0, you're 1-3, you've lost three in a row. Like, it's, I mean, that's, talk about a tailspin. I mean, that's just a nightmare. And so to me, if Gordon's out there, at least he's drawing coverage. So now you got a double Gordon and double Gronk, and now it leaves some lesser players that, you know, either Hogan and Dorsett can take advantage of, or now they have to switch to zone. And we all know what Brady does against zone. And so I think that that's, at least for this week. Now, moving forward, you got Edelman back. But, like, for this week, that's going to be the fix for me if that even happens.
Yeah, the Calvary is coming. That's basically what we're crossing our fingers for. I mean, Josh Gordon, he's shown that he can pick up offenses. He's come back from suspensions and immediately been a contributor. So it's not a really big issue of like what role or like is he capable of it, as so much as like what are the responsibilities they'll give him and like what will he have to earn versus like what Belichick always loves to do is if you earn the time, then you're just going to get it. And there's the chance that because he's been limited in practice, Josh Gordon is going to have a limited role in the offense. That's totally understandable. But someone really has to step up for that trickle effect that you mentioned, because Xavien Howard has been lights out at cornerback for the Miami Dolphins. I am just expecting Howard to erase whichever receiver he lines up against, which will most likely be Chris Hogan. Yep. He'll probably double Gronkowski because they've seen what the Lions did. They saw how the Jaguars are passing off coverage, and they're like, you know what, the Lions' strategy is a little bit easier. Someone is going to have to make a play. And if you put Josh Gordon out there, it makes it just so much easier for everyone else on the field.
Exactly. Yep, I agree 100%. And so, you know, we'll see what happens. And again, I don't think, you know, no one's sitting here expecting that Gordon is going to catch 12 passes on Sunday. That's crazy. But, like, you know, even if he catches just a few passes, that's enough to make the defense respect the fact that he can make those plays. And now, by them paying him more attention, the other guys open up. Because again, you know, those guys can't do it themselves. They just can't. Dorsett is not going to do it himself.
and neither is Hogan. You know, and Gronk can, but if he's bracket coverage the entire game, I mean, what are you going to do? You know, and so that's the thing is, like, once you can draw some of that coverage away, now those guys get some of the lesser corners on them, or like I said, you switch to a zone, and now that's when the Patriots offense can start clicking a little bit. You know, so let's just hope that that happens, because otherwise it's going to be another long day in Foxborough.
Yeah. I mean, that's asking a lot for the defense too, because if we're talking about the issues on the offense, I feel like the issues are ever more glaring on defense. And from your opinion, do you think that the weakness that they had against the Lions, even in against the Jaguars, is that entirely because Trey Flowers and Patrick Chung were out? Or are there, like, long-term issues that you have about the feasibility of this team and its defense?
I mean, that's the question, right? Is, like, is it a situation that, you know, is long-term, or is it because the guys are injured? And now you got Bentley out too. You know, I mean, it's a hard question to answer. I think Houston, they've got pressure with four consistently. Now, maybe Houston's O-line stinks, and we see, I mean, Houston's 0-3 at this point, so they're obviously not a very good team. So maybe that's part of it, but Detroit wasn't a very good team either, and they weren't able to get pressure against them. So, you know, I don't necessarily know what the issue is. To me, they have to be able to get pressure on the quarterback. Their corners are fine. Gilmore's very good, you know, and without Rowe, their second corner is like Jason McCourty, and that's – Jason McCourty is playing safety for a reason. And so, you know, you have him at, say, at corner, and you get no pressure, and you give him, you know, 5-6 seconds to throw the ball, and there's going to be guys running open because you just don't have elite coverage guys there. The speed was concerning, but I'm curious about the speed, because one thing that I was thinking is, will the defense actually be faster without Bentley? And not because Bentley's slow, but because Hightower was playing almost out of his position. Like, Bentley took Hightower's spot in the middle of the defense, and Hightower was playing almost on the outside as an outside linebacker. He just doesn't look like he's fast enough to play that spot. And so if you move Hightower out of that spot back into the middle where he's been so good for so long, maybe that actually improves the speed of the defense by getting rid of maybe a slower guy on the edge. I mean, that might just be wishful thinking for me, but that's kind of where I was started thinking about that the other day, and I was like, or today when I heard about the Bentley thing, and I was like, oh, I wonder if that might actually help them, because Hightower will go back to his position and he won't look so – he's looked awful the first three games in that spot.
Yeah, I mean, he definitely looks like he's slow, which is weird because it was a pec injury. But something's going on there. I wonder if it's just getting back into football speed. But I would actually be nervous about putting him at the middle, because if he doesn't have the speed for the edge, then I totally don't want him dropping out into coverage. You know, that'd just be a recipe for disaster. And also, just seeing what the Patriots do, I wouldn't be shocked if they just put Landon Roberts back in there, kept Hightower and Van Noy as the outside linebackers, because that's kind of just their strategy a bit. But no matter what happens, there's – just a lot of question marks everywhere, because, I mean, you mentioned Gilmore is great. Trey Flowers is great. Is anyone else playing well on defense? Because
no.
I mean, maybe Dietrich Wise has been, like, above average. No one else really stands out for having done anything well, not even players that were doing well last year. And it's just very bizarre to me that you have Brian Flores taking over for Matt Patricia. A lot of the personnel is the exact same. So, like, what is the reason for this? All of a sudden, you don't know how to play defense anymore. I'm sure the playbook is relatively similar to what they had with Matt Patricia. And so there's something going on. There's something happening where maybe they're going to turn a corner in a couple weeks and figure it out. But there's something weird going on.
And it's funny because you mentioned Flores, and we talked about it in the preseason. You know, and it was a big topic of discussion around here, where it was like, it looked like the defense was going to be more aggressive. They would come with more blitzes, they would come with more stunts, and they were getting more pressure. And it was like, wow, look at the difference between, you know, Flores' defense and Patricia's defense. And now they look slow and they haven't been able to get pressure. And you're like, what the heck is going on? And I think that, you know, it's the same questions like you have. And, you know, it's interesting to me. I thought the D-line was the strength of that defense, you know, with the depth that they have and the players that they have. I mean, Flowers is if he's not the best player in the defense, he's the second best player in the defense. And Wise is an up-and-coming talent. And I think, you know, Malcolm Brown, I thought last year was turning a corner to be a really good player. And I feel like he's regressed. And I'm surprised that Danny Shelton hasn't been more of a force in the middle. And Lawrence Guy's played pretty well, but not great. And Claiborne has some moves, but my goodness, was he a liability against Jacksonville. He just, you know, leave his lane and Bortles able to get outside. And the D-line in particular has really disappointed me these first few games.
Oh, totally. I mean, that, as you said, they were supposed to be the strength. There's something with the personnel choices that is really throwing me. Like, I'm very confused as to why Keontae Davis has been starting on that defensive front. And it reminds me of what happened early last year when they had Cassius Marsh out there, when it was just such a blatant weakness in that defensive front. And it's not as glaring because Cassius Marsh would make just like there would be like an 80-yard touchdown attached to some sort of miscommunication on his part. Uh-huh. But when you have Davis out there, you watch how the other teams are just lining up and they're just licking their chops just to run directly at him. Because he's effectively a rookie. He got a redshirt year last year because of his back injury. And so they're putting him out on the edge. He's getting blown 5 yards back every single time. He's not getting to the edge to go against the sweeps. It's just continuously happening over and over and over again, and I'm not sure why they haven't made the change.
Yeah. No, it's a great call by you, because that's really an issue that you look at and you're like, my goodness, like it's just so obvious. Like you said, it's just glaring. It's right there. And it's not like they don't have anyone else to play there. Like they can put guys out there, and maybe they want to save Wise for passing downs only, but Davis just ain't getting it done. You know, and even if you got to do, you know, Claiborne on one side and, you know, Brown, Guy, and Shelton as your other three, I mean, whatever. You just can't put Davis out there if they're going to run, because he's going to get just absolutely murdered out there. So I think that's actually a really good observation by you on that one. We talked about Flowers, Chung, and Rowe. They're injured. Is there any word on them this week about whether they're coming back, whether they're ready to come back? I know they've been limited in practice, but, you know, is there any word about what people might think might happen this week?
Yeah, limited in practice is a really good sign that they should be available, barring any sort of unforeseen circumstances. They missed their game last year, or last week, I should say, and then they're working their way back through the concussion protocol. They should go. It's very rare to see a player miss 2 weeks due to a concussion unless they have an extended history of it, and I don't believe either player has one. So they should be ready to go for next week.
Okay, that's good news. So that's good news. So if we get them back, and hopefully the defense will kind of turn around a little bit. I mean, honestly, at this point, especially with this team and the way Belichick can motivate his players, this is as close to a must-win game as there is in the NFL before January. Because, you know, I mean, if you go 1-3, and they haven't lost three straight games since 2012. It's been a long time since that's the case. And so, you know, you lose three straight. You lose the last one on Miami. Miami's 4-0, and they're three games up on you in the division. That's a long hill to climb. And I know the Patriots are really good, and I know the Patriots can go on a run and win 10 in a row. But it's still a lot to ask to come back from three games down to win the division. That's a lot. Whereas if you win tomorrow, you're only one game back, and you're 2-2. The Dolphins are 3-1, or 3-1, and you know things are kind of looking up for you as opposed to looking down. You know, and so that some of that momentum might be able to swing in the Patriots' favor.
Yeah, no, totally, and it's so much more manageable if you're back one game through right. The first quarter of the season. And so that's something that you can expect them to make up. The other way, especially if the Dolphins they steal that home field advantage away in the head-to-head, because the Patriots just always struggle when it comes time to play in Miami. So they can't give this one away and still expect to have a chance to win the division, because it basically gives the Dolphins the head-to-head tiebreaker. And that just makes it more than just a three-game lead.
Exactly. No, it's a good point, because they're playing down there again late in the season, and they're so bad down there late in the season. It just, for whatever reason, they cannot play in Miami. And, you know, so it's a good point, you know, if, yeah, three games, but it's almost like 3.5 because, yeah, you just, you know, you really not expecting them to win that game down in Miami. So we'll see, but it should be interesting. So that to me, at least, and those are the things for me where I feel like there's no way the Patriots lose on Sunday. I mean, obviously they've been playing like crap. They look like crap. And it's really the first time they've looked like crap for two consecutive weeks in a long time. You know, since I think you go back to 2012 when they lost, since they've lost two games in a row. And, you know, they looked so poor both of those games that you're just like, you know, maybe this is the end, but I don't buy it. I don't believe it. You know, you see the guys that are out there, they still have the talent, they still have the coaching. There's no reason they shouldn't be winning. And so to me, they turn it around. And if they don't turn it around this week, I mean, it obviously you say three games down, but to me, it's, you know, what is the competitive fire of these guys? You know, what is this team really made of where they just turtle in this big moment like this? Whereas I feel like other Patriots teams would kind of rise to that occasion and win this game.
Yeah, and you can tell when certain Patriots teams just don't have the it factor needed to get over. And, you know, like we could see like the 09 or the 05 Patriots. They just were lacking some just capability, you know, like there right. wasn't that finishing ability to get it done as you were talking about. Other years, but like even if they weren't going to win, they at least showed some grit. They need to have one game where they just really dig deep and turn it around. And this Dolphins game, I mean, they are 3-0, but they are a very beatable 3-0. They've won each game by one score. One of those games was against the winless Oakland Raiders. One of them was against the New York Jets, which just lost to the Cleveland Browns. And one was against the Tennessee Titans, who are, I know they're 2-1, but they're not like a very impressive 2-1.
No.
So, I mean, they put up 9 points against the Jaguars. Yes, they did win, but
right.
I mean, if you only put up 9 points, you're not that great of a team. And so, like, this is a Dolphins team that maybe they're not as good as a 3-0 record might suggest, but they're still a very good team. And this should be a really good opportunity for New England to start turning it around.
I agree. So let's hope for the best. We'll put the positive vibes in the air and hope that translates down in Foxborough on Sunday. Before I let you go, though, I do every guest that comes on the show, I ask them about their most memorable Weekend Warrior moment. And for those of you that are new listeners, Weekend Warrior moment is basically a Weekend Warrior is someone who plays sports just for the love of the game. They're not playing a high school team. They're not playing on a college team. You know, they're just playing either with their friends or, you know, pickup or whatever the case may be. And so, how about your favorite or your most memorable Weekend Warrior moment?
Yeah. So I've played a few sports here and there, you know, that old sports ball. I'd say that the most memorable moment I had was back in college where I was an RA. And so I was an RA for some freshmen, you know, they're new on campus. They wanted to do a flag football team. And I thought, you know what, this is a really good opportunity for a bunch of guys just to, you know, create that brotherhood make new friendships. And so there was a flag football group that I was like, you know what, I'll be a part of it. Good for you guys. It's a fun idea. And the way that the flag football leagues were set up at school were there was like a co-ed league, and then there was kind of like a beer league, and then there was one called the NFL league. And so these freshmen didn't really know what the deal was. And so they're like, yeah, we signed up for the NFL league. And I was like, guys, I think this is a really bad idea. And they're like, no, it's fine. Like, what's the worst that can happen? And I was like, these guys are the ones that are kind of on like the fringe of actually making the football team. These are players that not necessarily on the scout team, but if they wanted to play D3, they probably could have if they wanted to. They just decided not to. And so they're like, how bad could it actually be? Like we're they were all freshmen, and so they're not very highly of themselves. And so they said, you know what, let's just go see what the game is like. And so the very, very first game was it was against this team that had like three brothers on it. They were just like all very much like a Team Cobra from Dodgeball, where they had their very slick outfits. And I remember very, very distinctly that we went out there. We had no preparation whatsoever. We're lining up on offense for the very first play of the game. And then we just see across on the other side, and they're throwing out plays. They're saying, you know what, like, we're going to some sort of a zone coverage and watch out for these crossers and drop to this amount of depth. And we don't even have a play on offense. We don't even, we're just saying, go, just go. And so we clearly throw an interception on the first drive, and our feet are wet, so we have no excuses anymore. We know what's ahead of us. And so we're like, all right, let's try and regroup. This is going to be a tough game, but I think we can, like, give it the old college try. And ultimately, I think we lost, like, 70-0. Not a single first down the entire game, and half the team just, like, stopped showing up because there was no point. This was just brutal, and there was no point in going because they just didn't realize that we would be playing at such ridiculously high qualified players.
Oh, my goodness. That is ridiculous. Where did you go to school, Rich?
I went to Boston College.
Oh, my goodness. Okay, yeah. So when you say they're close to making the team, those guys are pretty good then, if that's the case. Yikes. Okay.
Yeah, we survived.
That's a good one. I like that. Oh, my God, dude. I can't even imagine. You show up the first day, you're like, yeah, I'm out. That's it. I can't compete against those guys. Oh, my God.
Whose idea was this?
Well, especially, it's just so funny because you're like, you know, well, I mean, we don't need to play, we just run, and then they're like calling out defensive plays, and you're like, oh, what have we gotten ourselves into here?
Yeah, when they're on offense, oh my goodness, like rub routes and stuff like that, they're breaking out Josh McDaniels' playbook.
Well, you broke up on us there.
I was just saying that. When they were on offense, they were just breaking out Josh McDaniels' playbook with all these crossing routes.
And that's the thing, man. Oh, my goodness. Forget about it. That's great. That's a good one. That's a good one. We'll add that to the list. That's a solid weekend warrior moment there. I like that. So, all right, before you go, why don't you plug yourself a little bit and, plug Pat's Pulpit and everything else?
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm the managing editor of PatsPulpit.com. We are part of SB Nation. If anyone's interested in being a part of the team, just like Pat, feel free to come reach out. We're always looking for people to contribute. We will have all analysis of this Patriots team, for better or for worse, hopefully for better, just because yes. This has not been as fun as writing about when they're doing well. But, yeah, just come over to PatsPulpit.com and get your fix of New England Patriots news.
All right. Very nice. Well, thank you, Rich. I appreciate you coming on. And maybe we'll have you on another time. Maybe in the playoffs when things have settled down a little bit and we're maybe possibly even approaching the Super Bowl. You never know. Who knows? Things happen pretty quickly here in New England.
Yeah, hopefully in a better situation.
Yes, exactly. Okay, that was a great interview with Rich. Really appreciate him coming on. And Pat's Pulpit is a really cool website. And again, I'm writing for them as well, so you can check me out. I write a few articles a week on Pat's Pulpit. I'm also writing on WTP, as always. But I am writing on Pat's Pulpit now, too. And, it's a fun website. There's a lot of good writers there. And so you should absolutely check it out if you haven't already done so. Now, we're going to get you into the love-hate segment with Chris. All right, so we're back for another edition of Love and Hate. And again, just as a reminder, or for those of you that are new listeners, Matthew Berry discontinued his love-hate column, and I thought it was a shame. And so I decided I was going to do love-hate on my show. And we're welcomed again by the great Chris Koselka. Thanks for coming in, Chris. Appreciate it.
Hey, thanks for having me again, Pat.
Absolutely, absolutely. So I'll get it started right away. I'm going to go with love. I'm going Tyler Boyd this week. Love the guy. Oh, first of all, before I start, I forgot to remind everyone, this isn't like the guys that are the best players or like the worst players. These are just guys that, that for this particular week are better than their ratings are. So, Tyler Boyd is a guy I love. He's not getting any love right now, but he's a constant target for Andy Dalton. Maybe that's why he's not getting much love. But he's rated ridiculously low, and even in some leagues, he's available in some leagues, just a straight pickup. So, have him on there and you know, play Tyler Boyd this week if you got him.
All right, I don't have him, but somebody will. Hopefully not the team I'm playing.
That's true.
All right. But yeah, I've been pretty surprised with Boyd, especially with AJ Green. Usually, you know, AJ Green sucking up all those targets. It's nice to see Tyler Boyd getting some catches. Another guy, Calvin Ridley, who's stealing some away from Julio Jones. He's been surprising too the past few weeks.
I would agree.
All right. Yeah. So for my love for my first love for the week is I'm loving the National League divisional races. They're heating up with 1 week left. We got the Cubs, Milwaukee, the Rockies, St. Louis, and the Dodgers all vying for three spots, two of them divisional champions, which would get that automatic bye into the playoffs. It's been very interesting. As of right now, it looks like it might be the Brewers, the Cubs, and the Dodgers, but there's only about half game in between a few of those teams, and definitely for that play-in game, that's going to be huge. It's going to be huge. So I'm pretty excited to see how this last week of National League Baseball plays out. Imagine that, National League Baseball here in New England.
Yeah, I don't know where that came from, but this is a football segment. I'm not sure where that came from, but focus on football here. So I'm going to go back again. I'll go with hate. I'm going to go with Mike Evans. This is the week that Fitzmagic runs out. I mean, you know, at this point, you know, Fitzpatrick does this every year, where every year he plays, he's like unbelievable for a few weeks, and then he throws zero touchdowns and five interceptions the next week. He's playing a good defense this week. Mike Evans is a top 10 wide receiver this week. Sell high on Mike Evans, because when Fitzmagic does get pulled and Jameis ends up back in there, Mike Evans is basically useless with Winston as quarterback anyways. So if you have Mike Evans, sell him high, get as much as you can for him, and cut bait, because he's on the hate list, and he's on the hate list for a reason.
Oh, man, I think you might be right about this one, Pat, because last week I put the kibosh on Fitzpatrick along with Tyrod Taylor, so he might be on to something.
Good point.
I'm actually feeling the love this week. I don't have a lot of hate, so I'm feeling the love. I know I talked about the National League divisional races, but I'm loving next week on Tuesday and Wednesday that we're going to get a chance to see some one-game playoffs, almost like automatic game sevens. How are you feeling about those one-game playoffs? I think it's great. I think it's the best playoff format in all of sports. It's really the only sport where there's an inherent disadvantage for not winning your division. And I've thought about this a lot, and I know I've talked to you off air about how you know, it's a penalty for playing in that one game playoff, and then they should maybe reseed after that playoff, so that way maybe the Red Sox won't be playing either the Yankees or Oakland. But I'm actually rethinking this, and I'm thinking of how awesome this one game playoff actually is, because even if you are a very good wild card team, you're screwing up your entire rotation. So even if you are playing the best team in baseball and you're you know one of the other better teams, no need to reseed or anything like that because your rotation's all screwed up. It's just a great addition. You're getting an excellent game, and you're giving those teams that won the division an advantage, which I think is something that's missing in some of the other sports. So just wanted to give a shout out to the commissioner for coming up with that one game playoff. Great idea.
Yeah. Okay. It's good. I mean, it is good. I do like the addition of the one game playoff, but once again, this is a football segment, so we're gonna try to stick to football on this one.
Got it.
Okay. All right. So I'm gonna go back to the love side. I'll come over the love side with you, and I'm going with Jason Witten. Jason Witten out here bringing politics into the booth is fantastic. Telling the country that liberals are ruining the game of football because with all the penalties, it's amazing. It's just great, great theater. And also, not only that, but he's fantasy relevant at this point too. ESPN lists the top 27 tight ends for this week, and exactly zero of them play for the Dallas Cowboys. So I feel like Jason Witten could step on the field on Sunday, show up, and play the game for the Cowboys and be more fantasy relevant than any of the tight ends they have right now. And maybe they could, like, either mic him up, or, like, what I think might be more fun is, like, stick, like, a PA next to him. So the PA just got to kind of, like, run with him, like, in the middle of, like, the crowd and stuff. Like, throw a helmet on the guy and some shoulder pads, and he's got to, like, run. And, you know, Witten is doing, like, commentary as he's, like, running his route and stuff. That, I think, would be pretty awesome.
Hey, I'm all about that NFL film style micing up. Can't get too much audio. Never have too much audio. All
right. I agree. Yeah.
So, you know, I'm going to stick with the love. I'm going to stick with the love here, I think, Pat. And how about this American League MVP race? Can you believe it? We got six guys, viable contenders. We got JD Martinez, Mookie Betts, Jose Ramirez, Alex Bregman, Mike Trout, and Matt Chapman. All with definite arguments to be considered the AL MVP. Probably the first time in a while we've had where it's this up in the air. A lot of people thinking Mookie Betts has it all wrapped up, but, you know, history says when you got two studs like Martinez and Betts on the same team, they kind of split votes. I'm actually kind of leaning more towards maybe Jose Ramirez sneaking in there, or maybe an Alex Bregman. Personally, Mookie Betts for me is the MVP. That's who I think it is. Outstanding year on the best team in baseball. Martinez is there also, but Mookie Betts, I mean, all around, you can't really beat him. The best outfielder in baseball right now. He had a better year than Trout, no doubt. So I'm kind of excited. Wish the American League, actually, maybe I will throw a little hate in here. Wish that the MVPs came out a little bit closer to the end of the season instead of about 2 months after the World Series. But just a lot of talent in the American League this year. Exciting time.
Yes. No. Yeah. Yeah. Totally. I mean, it's interesting. It's an interesting race. And, you know, two Red Sox are involved. And so, obviously, Boston's interests are peaked. But again, football segment, not baseball segment, football segment. So I'm going to finish off, and then you're going to give me one last one, and let's go for football this year. So I'm going back to hate on this guy. Patrick Mahomes, I'm hating this week. He's the number one rated quarterback. And according to Bill Simmons, according to Ben Simmons, he's just a rookie. So, you know, that's a lot to expect out of a rookie. You know, still staying as the number one quarterback for, you know, now a fourth straight week, that's a lot to ask. And so for me, I feel like, you know, maybe he'll still finish top 10. Maybe he won't, but maybe he'll still finish top 10. But I think number one rated quarterback on the board, that's a tough ask for me, especially, like I said, from a rookie. So, you know, that's what I got for my love hate. Chris, I'll come back to you. Football. Remember, football.
All right. I love naked bootlegs. I hate dime packages. But
like,
what do you think about Cleveland and Milwaukee? Those are my favorites going into the playoffs this year. They're two unknowns, kind of going under the radar, you know, but I really think they have a shot. Cleveland, not a great bullpen. Actually, probably the worst bullpen of any playoff team, but their starting pitching is amazing. You got Bauer, you have Carrasco, you have Kluber, and then you have Clevinger, who's having an amazing year as well. And then Milwaukee, not great starting pitching, but great bullpen, and their defensive positioning, they're doing wild things with sabermetrics. They pretty much have guys playing different positions depending on if a right-handed batter pitcher starting or a left-handed pitcher starting. You got Travis Shaw, a third baseman, who's now playing second, first, all over the place. They're just, you know, it's the evolution of the game that you're seeing with Milwaukee, I feel. And I'm really excited to watch these two teams in the playoffs that a lot of people are not talking about. So, I mean, I can't wait. I can't wait, Pat. How about you?
Yeah, you know, screw it. I'll give you a baseball one, too, okay? I hate the fact that I have to root against David Price in the playoffs. That slime ball, I just can't stand him, number one. And number two, I'm in take prison right now. I say that Price is going to suck, and that's the way it's going to go. And so that's it. That's all. That's nothing else I could say about that.
Oh yeah, man, I totally hate Cy Young caliber pitchers as well. They're terrible, man. Oh God, I feel so sorry for you.
It's just the
let me tell you the difference between, you know, Boston, New York sports and the rest of the country. John Gibbons, who's five games over 500 in his like entire 14-year tenure with the Blue Jays, got a standing ovation today in his last home game. That's what he got. They fired him today, and he got a standing ovation when he made his last pitching change, and they had the hashtag win one for the giver. The man's five games over 500 his entire career as a Blue Jay, and that's what they give him. I'm just telling you. Success leads contempt, I guess, right?
That's what happens when you play in a loser market like Toronto.
Oh, come on.
So, all right. Well, Chris, thank you for coming on. I appreciate it, even though we weren't quite on the same page there again. But I appreciate you coming on.
Hey, you know, someone's going to talk baseball around here. It's America's
best. That's true. That's a good point. All right, man. So I will, I'll talk to you next week, and maybe it'll be more football next week.
Hey, sounds good. All right, kid. I guess I'll watch some of that NFL.
There you go. See?
All right, man. Take care.
All right. Thanks again for Chris, to Chris for coming on the show. Appreciate that. It's always a lot of fun doing the love hate with him, even though, again, you know, maybe we're not on the same page all the time, but it is fun kind of doing that. So, and here is the 3-minute drill.
And now for something a little different.
Check. 3-minute drill. 3-minute drill, son.
All right. So for my 3-minute drill today, school has started. And so because of that, I am going to talk about some math. Okay. And so, you know, really talking about solving equations. And I think, you know, solving two step equations, like for instance, 2x plus 4 equals 12. It's kind of a fascinating situation what happens there. You want to isolate the variable, first of all, on the left side. So you want the x to be by itself. So the first thing you got to do is subtract 4 from both sides. And so that's going to end up being 2x equals 8. And then you I can't get through it. You guys, I hope no one crashed their car, like, skipping over this section because you thought I was going to talk about math for 3 minutes. I'm not. I can't do it. I mean, I could do it. I talk about math all day long. I teach math. I love math. But I'm not going to do that to you. Okay. Instead, I'm just really killing time because I'm talking about the Red Sox, and realistically, I don't really need 3 minutes to talk about the Red Sox. I can do it in 2. How about that? So, 2 minutes on the Red Sox. Here we go. Look, best team in baseball. It's been a hell of a lot of fun. You know, they've been winning a ton of games. It's great. They're an enjoyable team to watch. I think everybody loves Mookie. Everybody loves JD. You know, people are starting to come around on these guys. It's been a lot of fun to watch. They've won a ton of games. The concern that I have going forward, and the concern that everyone should have going forward, is their bullpen is trash. And there is no help for that coming. It's not like you can take one of the starters from the rotation and all of a sudden he's a great bullpen pitcher. Wait, you can if you did that with David Price. I made this argument months ago, but I feel like David Price is better in the bullpen in the playoffs than he is as a starter. That's a proven fact over the course of time. Now, he's been your second best pitcher on the staff. So I understand why you feel the need to start him in the playoffs. I get that. And I understand that. And I'm all on board for that. The concern that I have is that he's been so bad, like ridiculously bad in the playoffs, that if he has a bad start in game 2, then he's going to be toast for the rest of the series. Because mentally, he's just not going to be there. And that's the concern that I have with him. It's not about him pitching. It's the mental side of it for me. And that's what worries me. And so, you know, if he pitches great, look, and I said it during the love-hate, you know, I said I'm going to hate rooting against him. I'm not really going to root against him, kind of. I mean, I might, like, I'm not going to be super upset if he doesn't pitch well because I've been saying it all year long. But at the same time, I do want the Red Sox to win the World Series. And so in order to do that, they're going to need David Price to pitch really well. Again, I still think it should be out of the bullpen. I mean, look at how nasty Andrew Miller was for Cleveland when they went, you know, pretty far with him a few years back. Because he was that guy in the bullpen where it's like, if you don't have the lead by the seventh inning or sixth, seventh inning, you're screwed because you ain't scoring against him. And that's what Price is out of the bullpen. If he can do that as a starter, look out. Now they have a chance to actually win the World Series. So we'll see what happens. It should be interesting. But either way, it's been a hell of a season and a ton of fun. And I think Cora has proved a lot of people wrong. And a lot of the guys have proved a lot of people wrong. And so you know, let's hope for the best. It's all we really can do. So they've been the best team all year long. Unfortunately, the team with the best record doesn't always win the World Series, and it's kind of rare that the team with the best record wins the World Series. Not rare. I mean, rare is not the right word, but it, you know, more often than not, it's the team that doesn't have the best record. So, anyways, just something to think about. So, let's get you into the next one.
And now for something we think you'll really like. This Week in Sports History.
All right, so as always, I'm going in chronological order. I'm going to start with September 26th, 1908, and that is when Ed Rulbach becomes the first person to pitch a doubleheader shutout in MLB history. He's not only the first, but the only one to ever do it, against the Brooklyn Dodgers, and at that point they were the Super Bass. We've talked about this before. I don't know if Super Bass, but Super Bass just sounds better. He's the only pitcher to ever do it, as I said. In those two games, he had a total of 11 strikeouts and a total of 11 players reach base. 9 hits and 2 walks. Pretty impressive. 11 strikeouts and only 11 guys reach base. So that's pretty good. Interesting fun fact about Ed is he actually died on the exact same day as Ty Cobb. It's a little interesting tidbit there. So not that that means anything, but you know, I just said it was kind of interesting. So it's on to the next one. September 28th, 1920. 8 White Sox are indicted for throwing the 1919 World Series. It was obviously known as the Black Sox scandal. What's interesting about this is a lot of people don't even know this, and I didn't even realize this until, you know, I started reading up on it for this week, but they were in a pennant race in 1920, and none of the players had been suspended, and there was, you know, kind of rumors floating around and stuff, but nothing had really been decided. And so September 20th, they convened a grand jury, and I believe it was Eddie Chicot, I believe Chicot is his name. He was a pitcher. He confessed to the grand jury on September 28th that he had an involvement in throwing the World Series. And at that point, they had enough to indict. They indicted all 8 players. 7 of them were still on the White Sox. Chuck Gandel, who had been the first baseman the year before, was down in the minor leagues or something like that, or playing semi-pro or something like that, but he wasn't on the White Sox anymore. And what's interesting about it is that they were going into the final weekend of the season, and they had an opportunity to still win the pennant and make the World Series. And yes, the guys had been indicted, but they weren't going to be facing trial for another month or so. But Comiskey decided to suspend all 7 players anyways. The right call, I think so, you know. But either way, they lost 2 out of 3 that series and didn't make the playoffs, and that was the end of that. They were indicted in October, but here's the 8 guys. It was 8 men out, a famous movie. If you guys haven't seen it, check it out. It's pretty good. So I mentioned Chuck. I mentioned Eddie. Happy Felch, who was the center fielder. Fred McMullen was an infielder. And interesting story about Fred McMullen, he was a utility guy. He really didn't play a ton, but he was kind of like an advanced scout almost at that point. And he had heard the guys, supposedly, the story is, he had heard the guys talking about it, and he had said he was going to leak the whole thing unless they brought him in. So that's why he was in it. The other guys are Swede Ritzberg, who played shortstop. He went 2 for 25 with 4 errors in the series. Buck Weaver, who played third base, and John Cusack actually played him in the movie. The thing about Buck is that he didn't go in on the fix, but he knew about it and didn't do anything, and because of that, he was also banned. Lefty Williams, who was a pitcher, he went 0-3 with a 6.63 ERA for the series. There was only one other pitcher in the history of Major League Baseball that has 3 losses in a World Series, and that was George Fraser in 1981. He was a reliever for the Yankees. Now, why in the world the Yankees kept using the same reliever who kept losing? I don't know, but they did. Either way. You know, and one of the things, I mean, yes, he lost 3 games, but back then they played 9 games. And so, you know, it wasn't unheard of for a guy to get 3 starts in a series. And so, you know, really hasn't happened again because they dropped it down to 7. And so guys don't really have an opportunity, you know, to pitch 3 games in a series. But even still, I mean, 0-3 with a 6.63 ERA, not great. And then, of course, Shoeshoe Jackson was the last one. He actually confessed in grand jury testimony, but then he recanted his confession and professed his innocence basically till the day he died. In 8 games in 1919, he hit 375 with a homer and six RBIs. Did he do it? Did he not do it? There's a lot of kind of questions surrounding that. But again, you don't know. I mean, he said he took money. And if he did take money, then he did it. And, you know, I'm sorry, Pete Rose, but the only rule in baseball is you don't gamble on baseball. And, you know, he gambled on baseball. Rose is out. These guys gambled on baseball. They're out. It's that simple. You gamble on baseball, you're out. That's what they have. So, anyways, that's all I got for this week in sports history. I want to thank Rich Hill for coming on again. Make sure you guys check out Pat's Pulpit. Check out Rich on Twitter as well. He's on Twitter as well. And you can check him out there. Also want to thank Marcus from the Boxers Podcast for the intro song and the two cuts. Him and Wesley do a movie review every Monday. Spoiler-free movie review every Monday. Absolutely check it out. They did a Hot Garbage this week, which was a lot of fun. So those are always fun. No, that's not true. They did Hot Garbage last week. They did Greatest Showman this week, and they didn't like it, which I'm a little upset about, to be honest with you, if we're being honest here. Love Greatest Showman. Love the soundtrack. Kids love it. Listen to it all the time. They didn't like it. So, like, but, you know, what are you going to do? So, also want to thank MDOT and Core for the outro song. MDOT at MDOT Boston on Instagram and Twitter, and Core's at KORE of EMS. So definitely check them out. Mike's music's on iTunes, it's on Spotify, so absolutely check them out. As for me, the show is at Weekend War Pod, no E, so WKNDWARPOD. I am at WTP Lane, so you can always follow me there. Interact with me. You know, that's what I'm on there to do, is talk sports. So, anyways, I appreciate you coming on. Another week. Thank you, and I'll talk to you next week.
Simmons, no timeouts. You gotta go. Williams, three. Yes!
You don't need to tune in. This is a show, bro. Put the game upside down like a strobe globe. Weekend Warriors, it's a podcast. What you call the commentary, shit I call trash.
Warriors, come out to play.
Weekend Warriors, it's a podcast.
What you call the commentary, shit I call trash.
Hey, yo, WTP. We Warriors, especially on the weekend. Looking for that sports talk, this is where it be, man. Breakdowns on your favorite teams and all that. Hear about the starters long before the ball snap. You can call Pat or go ahead and call Mike, cause we here all night, no time to stall, right? 2 seconds left, clutch shot, it's go time. Knuckles on the O-line, watch the losers go wine.
Turn me up on that radio dial. It's been a while since I played, but I'm here with a smile. I'm taking jump shots, get them in and I'm out. I'm breaking records like Bill Russell. Kid has got muscle, being polite when I'm Pat and his mic. You see the city of champs coming to victory dance, buddy. It's radio talk, so turn it up when it's on. We're gonna listen and rock to what it is that you want. Warriors,
y'all need to tune in. This is a show, bro.